Maybe they just didn't want to know about these famous people in the Bible that we're going to talk about tonight. Let's look at these folks. See if you recognize any of these individuals. Just raise your hand if you know who one of these individuals that I mention here is. Shammua, the son of Zachar. Anybody know who that one is? You know that sounds like a Bible name. That's not Shamu, that's Shammua. That's not that big whale. No, that's not right. How about Shaphat, the son of Hori? I don't know him either. These are men, by the way. How about Egal, the son of Joseph? Do you know Joseph had a son named Egal? What about Palti, the son of Raphu? Now these are famous people now. How about Gadiel, the son of Sodi? Well, I know it's not Jesus or Paul, but these are some important Bible characters right here. How about Gadi, the son of Susi? How about Amiel, the son of Gamali? Caesar, the son of Michael? That's not Michael the archangel now. That's not his son. Nabi, the son of Bophsi. Some of these are just hard to even pronounce, but we ought to know who these fellows are. Giul, the son of Maki. How about Oshea, the son of Nun? Know who that is? How about this one? Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. We've heard of that fella. Now you know. Now that I've mentioned Caleb, you know, don't you? Those first 10 folks that we didn't know at all were the 10 spies that brought back a bad report. They were the leaders of Israel. Each one of them was a leader of a tribe of Israel. One of a leader. For example, Judah had about 57,000 people. And this one man was the one man chosen out of that tribe to go spy out the land and bring back the report. One man out of 57,000 was chosen. That was Caleb. Now, Oshea, I tricked you a little on that one because we know him better as Joshua. But his name in the King James is Oshea. But we recognize Caleb. And we remember Joshua. Why do we remember Joshua and Caleb, and yet these other 10 guys who were just as famous, just as well known at that time, they were each the leaders of their tribe, leaders of Reuben and Simeon and Issachar and Benjamin and Zebulun and Joseph of Manasseh's tribe and Dan and Asher and Naphtali and Gad. These men, they were the leaders of their tribe. And I confess, if somebody had read me that list last week, I wouldn't have known those guys either. I mean, we've read the Bible, you know, and we've heard some of these names said. Maybe they didn't see them pronounced them the way I did. But we may have heard these things pronounced if we listen to the Bible on tape or something. If we read it, we've seen those names in there in the book of Numbers, chapter 13, if you want to turn over there. We're going to be looking at that chapter a little bit tonight because we want to learn a lesson from these people. The Bible in the New Testament particularly reminds us and teaches us that we can learn things from the people in the Old Testament. And we want to learn some things from this situation. And I know we've been told about this story before. Oh yeah, they went and they spied the land and they came back with a bad report, and so they didn't get to go into the land. We know the gist of it. But I want us to look at it a little closer and let's see what really happened here. These were the men, verse 16 of Numbers chapter 13. These are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea the son of Nun, Jehoshua. Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan. And he said, you go up through the south way, up into the mountains, see the land, see the people that dwell there, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what the cities they be that dwell in them, whether they're in tents or whether they're in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood there or not. Be of good courage and bring of the fruit of the land. And it was the time of the first ripe grapes. So he says, you go up there and I want to know if there's a lot of people or a few people, if they're strong people or weak. We want to know that because we're fixing to invade this land. And remember that God had promised them this land. Back in verse 2, God Himself said, send men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. God's going to give this land. All they have to do is go look at it. You know, if I said to you, I'm going to buy you a brand new car, and I told you, maybe I told you, I'm going to buy you a brand new Lexus, or I'm going to buy you a brand new Mercedes-Benz, and I want you to go and look at them and look at it, see what features you like and what features you don't want. I want you to go look at it. And I'm going to buy it for you and I'm going to give it to you. When you go to that car lot, are you going to be worried about the price tag? You going to be worried about the interest rate or the processing fees? Or the salesman's commission. You don't go worry about any of those things. You're just going to look at that car because you know it's going to be given to you. Don't expect me to do that. You've seen the cars I drive. You know I could buy you one. I can't even buy me one. But that's basically what God tells these people. He says, I'm going to give you this land. I just want you to go look at it. Go see what it looks like because I'm going to give it to you. And so they do. Moses sent them. They went up there. Down in verse 23, they cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes and they bear it between two upon a staff. Now you know a staff, that's like a walking stick. It's about this big around. And they had it so on their shoulders between the two of them and had one cluster of grapes hanging from it. How many clusters of grapes like that at the grocery store you ever seen? Ah, it's a good land. One cluster of grapes and it's so big they got to have two men to carry it. A rich land. Remember, that was one of the things they were supposed to look for. They were supposed to look at the fruit of the land. They were supposed to look and see whether it was a fat land or a lean land. And guess what they're finding? It's a fat land. They got grapes that are growing so wonderful that one cluster of them is too big for one man to carry. So they come, they take some pomegranate and some figs, and they come back. They search for 40 days. Over a month. They're looking at everything in that land. And they come back. And they bring the congregation together. And they tell Moses, yeah, we went to the land and it flows with milk and honey. Here's the fruit. And they show everybody the fruit that they brought back. They said, nevertheless, the people are strong that dwell in the land. That was one of the things he wanted them to know. Are the people strong or weak? Are they few or many? He wanted to know that. Okay, the people are strong. All right. The cities are walled. He wanted to know that too. Do they live out in tents? Like we live, you know, the Israelites were just living in tents. But are they living in tents like us, or do they have some cities with walls around them? They live in cities with walls around them. Then he goes on to say, and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The children of Anak were giants. So they said, whoa, there's giants in that land. They're big men of great stature. So far, so good. They've done everything Moses told them to do. They brought back the fruit. They're telling, you know, hey, yeah, they're strong people. They're big people. They're, you know, they're bigger than us. They live in walled cities. And Caleb speaks. Verse 30. He stills the people before Moses, and he said, let's go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. Of course they are. Caleb knows God promised we could get this land. He's going to give it to us. We don't even have to worry about it. We want to go get that land. And if the story stopped right there, and we went to the next chapter and we found there they go going into the land, wouldn't that be a wonderful story? But that's not the way it goes. Because the chapter doesn't end right there. There's three more verses. In verse 31, the men that went up with him said, we're not able to go up against those people, for they are stronger than we are. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it, a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there were, we saw the giants, the son of Anak, and we were in our own sight, notice that, we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. These men were cowardly. They looked at these folks who were bigger than them physically, and they said, wow, they're bigger. We're like little grasshoppers. They'll just step on us, and that, I'm sure that's how they look at us too. We have these things that happen in the church today as well. We have situations where God has told us to do something, and He's told us that He'll help us do it. He's told us that He will accomplish it if we'll just do what He tells us to do. And then we have some, sometimes prominent people, sometimes preachers, sometimes elders, sometimes the prominent members of a congregation that'll say, we can't do that. We can't do it. There's no way. It's too hard. There are too many enemies. There's too many. This will happen. That bad thing will happen. And they start looking at every negative thing instead of trusting that if God said He'll do it, He'll do it. These 10 men, 10 people turned a nation of over 600,000 men, that's not counting the women and children, possibly as much as 2 million people. And these 10 men, because of their fear and their doubt, they kept all of those people from going into the promised. If the people had heard Caleb and said, all right, we're going to go. Caleb said it's great. We'll listen to him. But no, they listened to the majority. Sometimes we listen to the majority. Majority is important. We live in a democracy. The majority rules. It's not supposed to be that way in the church. In the church, God rules. There's an old saying, lead, follow or get out of the way. Alex touched on this morning. I was afraid he was going to steal the whole sermon from me this morning when he started talking about these folks that trip us up as we're trying to run the Christian race. That's exactly what these fellows did. Here were these people, came out of Egypt. They're there. They're excited about getting to go in the land. Can you imagine, during these 40 days while these spies are spying out the land, can you imagine the talk around the camp as they're talking about, oh, I wonder what they're going to find over there. Oh, I wonder what they're going to bring back. I wonder how soon they'll get back. I wonder how soon we're going to get to go. But then when they came back, instead of encouraging the people, they discouraged the people. And only Caleb spoke up. We know that Joshua stood with Caleb in the end of things, of the matter, but Caleb was the one that spoke up. And we know about Joshua from verse 6 of chapter 14. After the people have said, oh no, you brought us to die and we should have just stayed in Egypt and it would have been better for us. How do you go from being on the verge of the biggest event of your life to wishing you'd never come? How does that change overnight? Negative emotions are powerful. Pessimistic people can dampen an entire group's mood quickly. It's like putting a wet cloth over a little match. It's out. And if you doubt that negative emotions are more powerful, how many bad things that happened to you from your childhood can you remember? Versus how many really great things from your childhood that you can remember? We remember the bad things that happened. I don't know why our minds are that way, but we just remember those things. When there's a strong fear or pain, oh, we remember those things. We never forget. We'll be laughing about something. Last week, during our Fishers of Men class, Alice said something that was just hilarious at the time, and I was trying to tell Byron about it this week. And I couldn't remember. I had to ask him, what was she said? Because it was so funny at the time. And I couldn't remember. It was only a week ago. But boy, I remember when I was 6 years old and I fell out of the car and bashed my head on the concrete. I remember that like it was yesterday. Sometimes I can still feel that pain up there where I had to get all those stitches. It still hurts sometimes. And that was over 30 years ago. But I can't remember something funny. And I laughed at the time. I thought it was funny. But I couldn't remember. It was just last week. Caleb said, good things. Oh, yeah, we can go in there and take that land. But 5 seconds later, when the other men said, oh, no, we can't do it, they forgot all about what Caleb said. They had entirely forgotten that God had promised it and that He could do it. How often do we do that in our lives? God tells us that through Jesus we can overcome the sin in our life. And how often do we hear folks say, well, I just can't quit doing such and such. I just can't stop. Now I know, we all know, by yourself you can't stop. That's why you need Jesus. That's why you need God's Word. That's why you need prayer. That's why you need your fellow brothers and sisters to help you and encourage you. Ourselves, we can't do anything. Could one of these fellows have gone up there and taken the land? No. But the whole nation could. We've got to work together. And there may be some things that we're not able to do as well as others are. That's understandable. Some folks have one talent, some another. But even if I can't do something as well as someone else can, I can encourage them to do it instead of discouraging them. These 10 men. And you probably won't remember their names. You've probably already forgotten most all of them, if not all of them. Not even through with the lesson and we've already forgotten their names. Because they didn't make a mark in history. The only thing we remember was, well, those 10 guys who brought back a bad report. That's all we remember. They're just those 10 guys. But Caleb, we remember him. Joshua, we remember him. Because they stood out from the crowd. And they stood up for what was right, even against all odds. Look at verse number 6. Well, really, let's go back to verse number 4 of chapter 14. The people wept and they murmured and they wished they died in the land of Egypt. They wished they died in the wilderness. Why did God bring us out here? And so they said in verse 4, they said to one another, let's make a captain and we'll go back to Egypt. Now, I'm sure the Egyptians would have been real happy to see them coming. After all the havoc, all the death, all the suffering that they had caused before they left, and then Pharaoh's army following after them gets destroyed. Oh yeah, I'm sure they'd be glad to welcome you back with open arms, wouldn't they? But that's right, we're going to go back to Egypt. Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. All 1.5 or 2 million of them. And Moses and Aaron fall on their face in front of them. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes, and they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land we pass through to search is an exceedingly good land. And if the Lord delights in us, He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only don't rebel against the Lord. Don't fear the people of the land. They are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But the congregation bade stone them with stones. Joshua and Caleb facing a group of over a million people, over 600,000 men of fighting age, and these two guys stand up and say, don't do it. We can get it. If God's on our side, we can win. And they were facing down death because the people were ready to stone them. You know what stopped the people from stoning them? Wasn't common sense. Notice verse number 10. All the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. The Lord showed up. That's the only thing that stopped these people from killing Joshua and Caleb right there on the spot. Why? Why would they want to kill Joshua and Caleb? I mean, what did Joshua and Caleb do? Joshua and Caleb just trying to encourage them to do right? Why would you want to kill the people that are trying to... They're trying to help you get God's blessings and you want to kill them? Mm-hmm. You know why? Because Joshua and Caleb's faith, the faith of those two men, was making the fear and cowardice of those others apparent. It was making it obvious that those people were cowards. And so their attitude was, you're making us look bad, so we're going to get rid of you. Sometimes in the church, when someone is working, someone else who doesn't want to work will look at that person and say, "Now you're making the rest of us look bad." Instead of saying, "I want to be more like you," they try to discourage that person, try to stop that person, try to tear that person down because you're making us look bad. Of all of these people, all 603,000 and some odd of them, or it may have been some even, I don't remember the exact count, but there's over 603,000 men and all their wives that were over the age of 20 when they left the land of Egypt. Two men got to go into Canaan. And we know who those two men were, Joshua and Caleb. All the rest of them died in the wilderness. They never got to see that land. Of course, Moses and Aaron died before Joshua led the people into the land of Canaan as well. But I love what Caleb says to Joshua when they're divvying up the land. And even if these guys weren't buddies, they had to have camaraderie. They were the only two guys their age in the whole nation. I know when I was a child growing up in a small congregation, a lot of times I was the only one my age. Or maybe there was one other person my age. Well, we were pretty close if there was somebody else my age. I know some of our young people have felt that way from time to time. Amanda felt that. There just weren't any others her age. She was by herself. She was about the only one. And that's a lonely thing. But imagine if you were the only person in the whole nation your age. There was nobody else. And with Joshua, there wasn't anybody else older than them. And there wasn't anybody else 20 years younger than them. Caleb, at least we know, was 40 years old when he searched out the land. Later, when they entered the land, he's 80 years old. And there wasn't anybody else that was over 60. Nobody except Joshua was even close to his age. So these guys had some camaraderie. And so Joshua's divvying up the land, and Caleb comes to him and he says, "You remember?" Because he was the only one that could remember. There was nobody else to remember, nobody to reminisce with. "You remember how when we sought out the land and it was a good land?" And he said, "You know what? I want that mountain where the giants are. I'm still strong as I was that day. It's been 40 years. I'm over 80 years old now, but I am still just as strong as I was that day, and I want that mountain." Caleb didn't ask for, "Is there some land that the young folks have already cleared off? Give me that spot." No, he said, "I want the mountain where the giants are. I'll take that land." What a leader of a family. And I know, and we hear more about Joshua, and we certainly hear a lot more about Moses. But what about Caleb? He didn't become the hero. He didn't become the leader of Israel like Joshua. He didn't get to take on the authority from Moses to lead the people. He was faithful to the end anyway. I want to encourage all of us tonight. Be like Caleb. Be like Joshua. Stand for what's right. Do what's right. And trust the Lord. If He says it, He'll do it. And don't be like the people, those wishy-washy people who allowed those other 10 guys to talk them out of the best thing that ever could have happened to them on this earth. They could have had a great land. Instead, they wandered around out in the desert till they died. They could have had a home. They could have had good farmland, rich land for their cattle, a place to call home and settle down. No, didn't do it. Wandered around. Place to this place, camping here, camping there. Have you ever been camping? Camping is fun for a night or two. And then it's nice to get back home to a nice soft bed. Can you imagine camping for 40 years? Walking here, walking there, setting up your tent, sleeping on the hard ground again, putting down the tent, having to cook over the campfire again. Oh, camping's not that much fun. Not for 40 years. That's what they had to do because they refused to follow God. They allowed those 10 naysayers to talk them out of the best thing that could have happened to them. Don't let anybody discourage you from that. If you see a Joshua or a Caleb, go after them. Follow their lead. You may not feel, well, I'm not like Joshua and Caleb. Well, at least you can follow Joshua and Caleb then. One of the saddest things that I read in these two chapters, it's not those 10 guys. I mean, that's sad that those 10, but the saddest thing is there was nobody else that followed Joshua and Caleb. Not even one. Who are we following? Are we following the negative Nellies that are always telling us what can't be done and how, well, the church will never grow and you'll never be able to get over and you'll never learn the Bible and you'll never this and you'll never that and don't bother studying with that person. Don't even talk to that person because they'd never listen anyway. Are we going to listen to those folks? For too long we have been. We've been listening to that kind of talk. It's too much work. It's too hard. We even have a saying. I hear it all the time. Don't work too hard. I've said it too. You've said it to somebody. Oh, all right, see you later. I'm heading to work. All right, don't work too hard. What do we mean don't work too hard? Is that what God tells us? Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Whatever you do in word and deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Serve as though you're serving the Lord. Does that mean not don't work too hard? Apparently so, because that's the same attitude we have in the church. Don't work too hard. What's the least I can do and get by and get to heaven? That's what I want to do. We need to change that. We need to encourage people to do your best. Work as hard as you can. Give God the best you've got. And that doesn't mean dress up real nice on Sunday. It's about the way you live and the things you do, not the clothes you wear. Be a Joshua and Caleb if you can. But even if you struggle with that and you say, I can't be a Joshua and Caleb all the time, at least follow Joshua and Caleb. Follow the people who are working hard. Follow the people who are leading down God's path. And don't let the naysayers deter you. There will always be naysayers. They cannot win. And we can't allow them to cause us to lose either. I think about it. I guess they say, I know it's not our town, but they get to share the same name, so we got to cheer for them, right? Butler, little college basketball team, nobody'd ever heard of hardly, is going in the championship game of the basketball. Who's not cheering for the underdog? But how many people told them they couldn't get that far? Everybody said, oh, you can't do it. They didn't listen. That's just basketball. That's not even anything important. But they didn't listen. They stuck to their guns and they did their best and they made it. How much more important then in something that has eternal significance? You're here and you have a need to respond this evening. Maybe you have been one of those 10 spies. Guess what? On the day of judgment, God's not going to know your name. Oh, I know. He knows everybody's name. But He's not going to call your name. You're not going to be on His list. You're not going to be in His book if you're one of those 10 spies. If you're following in their footsteps. But Joshua and Caleb, I believe, are going to be there. And God's going to call their name. And I want to be called right along with them, don't you? Are we willing to make the sacrifices to get there? Are we willing to stand up to the crowd, to the others, even other people who may seem to be leaders, and stand up to them and say, no, I'm going to follow the Lord. I can do it. If you're here and you have a need to respond, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.